Accession number 29047, Mr. Len Townend, Reel 10. Now, the other thing you were put on was searches for bombs. Now, tell me about that.
Well, at regular intervals, Aoki used to announce, it's just like this Al-Qaeda lot, they'd announce over the radio that they'd planted bombs on such and such an airfield, or they'd planted bombs on such an army depot, which was obviously there for terror arguments, see. Well, somebody had to go and have a look for them. In fact, that's been fair. Almost everybody had to go and look for them, no matter who you were, you went. We used to go look, you had to search every aircraft, you used to get it and see if you could locate these bombs. Well, I never did locate one, but it was a bit hairy going inside, not really knowing what you look for. I didn't know what a bomb looked for. I know what you look for when you stuck them on aeroplanes and dropped them that way, but what these things were, I had no idea. Nor did any of my lads. So that was a bit scary.
And what did you get out and about? I mean, did you go out into Nicosia?
No, I was a total coward. I used to go out because Nicosia airfield was not far from Nicosia town. And Nicosia town apparently was quite good. But I never, ever went out. You could have done, but you had to go out. And in fact, that's one of the things. I've still got my rules of engagement. And you carried Stengel with you all the time. And you had to go. If you went out, you were supposed to be covered by it. But I said, no, damn it, I've got a family at home, I ain't going out there.
So you stayed on the base?
Yeah, I never went out. I never went off of Nicosia base at all.
Now, tell me about the Sten. We haven't really talked about the Sten. What did you think of the Sten?
Oh, I'm no expert on guns, but I used to like it enough. Apart from the fact you could get your fingers trapped, so they said, but I never knew anybody that did. But when it recoiled, the bolt was open, so you could get your thing. But it was an adequate weapon for Air Force people, because we weren't.
Did you know it would go off if you dropped it? I mean, did they tell you that?
Oh, yeah, that was a safety precaution. That's why you had to make absolutely sure there were certain features in it that you had to do. See, the other feature is that what used to happen, Peter, it used to go off, is they'd take the magazine off, not realising they'd left one inside. And drop it, and that would go. But yes, we were.
What do you think of its accuracy?
Oh, it wasn't. It was hopefully no accuracy. I mean, you used to go on the range with them and just totally different to a 303, which is a deadly accurate weapon. Yeah.
So, anything else about Nick? You were only there a couple of months? Right?
Yeah, I was there from the time the serious crisis started until it finished. I came back just before Christmas. Came back just in time for Christmas.
56.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Now, anything else? So, before we leave, anything else about Cyprus?
Well, the other story that I always cries when I come back, I thought about applying to get out of the Air Force, but I cooled down. I was always binding the authorities at Nicosia, the regulars, because there was a regular base at Nicosia where people were on. During the war, there was flipping aircraft taking off going into Suez, and they were having sports afternoon on a Wednesday. Nicosia main camp was. I thought this was dreadful, and the whole of this, they were still on a peacetime, total peacetime business, and they weren't. Nobody's going to bend their rules for it, and they used to get to hate me, and I wanted to get my blokes back because they all we were need for us. We were just hanging around there, and I kept going into, oh, I forget what it calls, some office that was supposed to be repatriation or what they call it like that. But of course, we again had got no headquarters behind us. I was the chief, that was it. And they got fed up with me, they really did, because going in, but I used to go in and march in and shout the odds and thump the tables when they get court martial.
So what were you asking for?
To get home, to send my lads home, eh? So the final thing was that the corders ought to go, the corders all up. We went into Nicosia, right in the departure lounge. I go and they called my name out. I got on the aircraft, and I was the only one that held my blokes back. I was absolutely bloody raving. It took me out. Oh, I was on the angriest I've ever been, because it meant my lads thought I'd left them and dumped them.
So did you have to go?
Yeah, oh God, you're on it. I was on the aircraft before I realised they weren't. You can't. Even I'm daft enough to run off the aircraft. It was really being court martial offence.
So what happened when you came back? Where were you sent then? Was that back to Felwell?
No, it came back. Where did we land? I honestly don't remember where.
No, I mean, was that your next base?
Oh, they came back. Well, I was only on loan from Saltwater, Nicosia, you see. The aircraft that came back in was probably the other thing. It was a Beverly. And the Beverly's one of these aircraft bummed up as can carry hundreds of troops and all this. It can, but then it carried about 200 yards up the road. So we came back from Nicosia in the Beverly, who was being flown back to UK. Oh, I forget how many stops we had. And twice in North Africa, once in Malta, twice in France, and finally here. And I can't remember which base we came back to in UK. I think it may have been, no, Lyneham wasn't probably open then. I honestly don't remember which came to, but anyway, came back with train and back home, that was it.
Now, then you seem to have just fallen back into the routine at the
exactly,
training. Now, anything else happened before
not
you
school
go
of technical
to
training, it's flying training.
School of flying training?
Yeah.
Oh, right, sorry.
Yes, it's three school of, I've forgotten what the initials are now. School of flight. It was initial flying training for pilots. They were training pilots.
Sorry.
Okay.
Now, what is the next thing? There's nothing else happened there. Then you seem to go on to this Thor business, which
that's
is going to be the last big bit of your career. Well,
it was. That's it, yeah.
And quite unusual for someone to have been on this. Now, so before we leave, anything about Felwell? Nothing else? You're there another 2 years, but nothing really comes to mind. Just routine.
Nothing routine. Apart from playing football and cricket and funny things like this. And we played the officers' mess, the sergeants' mess, played the officers' mess, and they couldn't understand why we were beating them until somebody counted how many. I think we had 20 blokes going before they noticed that we kept sticking them in.
Now, tell me about what's happened. The next stage in August 1958, and this whole Thor business starts. Now,
well,
can you take us right through this from the start, how you got involved in
right,
Thor?
Well, to start with, I was at Feltwell. I was at Feltwell, and the flying training school closed down, and I was due to be posted elsewhere, but it never happened. I just hung around for a little while and that. And while this was coming up, Thor came up as being an option, you see. Well, I wanted to be right at the front all the time. So I immediately volunteered for Thor.
Now, what was Thor?
Intercontinental ballistic missile fired by a Rocketdyne engine and two retros.
Now, what did you know about it? Or would the answer be nothing at the stage?
At this stage, I knew nothing except it was a missile. So anyway, I volunteered for it. I was sent up to Innsworth, sent up to Innsworth for choosing. And because of the manning policy for Thor, which was taken direct from the Americans, they decided to adopt the Americans' policy. Well, the Americans' policy is totally different to us. It was a very stupid decision, is that everybody that was on Thor, because it was such an important weapon, had to be a senior NCO. So they drained the Air Force of top senior NCOs, and I put myself in that grade, to man the Thor system. So we went up to Innsworth, where we were given the trade test to test our technical ability.
Now, what was the trade test you got?
Well, it was just a trade test to see if very much akin to when Gibson got the dam busters in. You know, you were refused if you were a bad lad, if you weren't anything, if you hadn't got anything at the back of you. That was it. So that was it. Then I went back to Feltwell for a short while, fully intending to stay at Feltwell, I hoped. Then, as things were, I hadn't been on the course or anything, and they started bringing the missiles into Feltwell. Or at least they started bringing the equipment in to build the emplacements and that. And during this time, I then got sent to America on the course.
Now, let's talk about the course. And where did you go for this course?
I went in originally to Davis-Monson Air Force Base near.
Where's that?
Southern California.
And it's called the Davis?
The Davis-Monson.
Monson?
Yeah, I suppose it's some American big head somewhere. Davis-Monson Air Force Base.
Now, and that was in Southern California. Now, what were you doing there?
Well, from there we went on a training course to the Douglas Aircraft Company factory. They'd set up a training course. Now, the corollary of this is that the whole idea of this Thor thing was going to be, we'll say, I can't remember the actual time, but 6 months hence all this was going to happen. But during that time, the Russians launched the Sputnik, which panicked everybody to hell about this, so that they advanced the course 6 months. They wanted to get the Thors in 6 months because they wanted the cover. If the Russians could put a satellite in orbit, then they obviously had the missiles that could throw stuff at you as well. So they advanced the course, must have been up to 6 months. So they weren't ready. It was quite simply that. It was totally unfair on Douglas Aircraft Corporation, who was setting the course up. And we had absolutely no training whatsoever. It was absolutely
dreadful.
Well, tell
me, what was the course like?
Well, it was a technical course again. You were taught about missiles. You were taught how the missile worked. Actually, we're supposed to go into it very deep. But nobody knew. The instructors didn't know. We were supposed to look at go on the emplacements and see the trailers that housed all the equipment and what the equipment was. But they hadn't got any. They had trailers, and they had these wooden mock-up things with pictures stuck on them of the instruments. And it was totally, absolutely hopeless. It was absolutely nothing at all. In fact, we had the famous Lobo man, as we called him. As soon as he could, we're all senior NCOs. And let's be fair, a lot of American senior NCOs there on the course as well. And we were all expecting to be taught something. And we were getting quite uptight about this, where there's people having the faintest idea what they were talking about, just rabbiting on. So when he used to get overwrought, the Americans actually were much worse than us. They used to fetch in the Lobo man. He used to tell us dirty jokes. And I can't remember what the joke was that made him the Lobo man. Or do I remember it? I can't tell you that on tape.
So, what was it to learn about the... I mean, it's a very different sort of engine.
Oh, it's totally different. It's a rocket engine.
Well, tell us a bit about the rocket. I mean, I'm not sure how much you can, or whether you want to save some of it.
Oh, it's well known now. It is one in the Leicester Space Centre, the Thor missile.
Now, tell me about it.
Right, well, basically, it's an engine. It's a reaction engine, so that you push out fuel and liquid oxygen as the oxidant to fire it out of a nozzle at the back. This nozzle goes out at great velocity, and it just goes away like any ordinary, like a rocket on firework night. But it's the amount of fuel you push through and the amount of liquid oxygen that gives it its thrust. And that's basically all it is. It's the most simplest engine in the world. The actual difficulties of it is to get the stuff in the right place at the right time and get it burning without blowing up.
How do you overcome those difficulties?
Well, you don't. It's only the engineers, the design engineers. In many cases, the Germans did this before. You can see pictures of theirs where those missiles take off and just drop back and blow up. The Americans had a lot of the same.
So, what were you learning to do as fitters or engineers?
Basically, servicing it. Secondly, depending on which trade you were doing. Secondly, how to operate it as a system, a viable system.
Now, let's
system.
Do the servicing. Well, which should we do first?
Well, the servicing. You had to learn how to put. You see, you're handling two different fuels that we'd never handled in our life before: liquid oxygen, right? Liquid nitrogen, paraffin, or RP1 as it's called. It was a wide cut, a bit halfway between paraffin and gasoline. High pressure nitrogen, 6,000 pound high pressure nitrogen, which is a pressure we've never heard of in the Air Force before. And you had to learn how to refuel. I mean, liquid oxygen would kill you if you touched it. Well, it won't kill you, but it would freeze you to the pipes. It's liquid oxygen, that's it. The RP1.
How do you handle it?
With care. Well, this is the whole point, you see. The whole design of the thing is that it flows on its own, but you have to operate the valves to make it flow. It's when it launches, sort of thing, it's almost totally automatic. But you've got to know what you're doing is setting everything up, and this was just the training of it in itself.
So it's liquid oxygen. What the other one's liquid nitrogen. What about that?
Well, liquid nitrogen is because liquid nitrogen is not combustible. Liquid nitrogen is used to provide a pressure where normally you would use a pump, but you use liquid nitrogen. Then it doesn't contaminate the fuel. It doesn't contaminate the oxygen. From the point of view of combustion, it's inert. So it's used as a pressure medium, so to drive things.
So the liquid oxygen's the fuel, the liquid nitrogen's the pressure thing. And what was the third there? What's that? What's the third part of the fuel system?
Oh, what did I say? I said high pressure nitrogen. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And then there's the other things you had to learn was the thing has got to be targeted from the ground, and it's driven. The rocket engines are the force forward, but you have a guidance system. And
now tell me about the would you be learning that as well?
Yes. No. But not to the same extent, because that again.
What were the principles it operated under, as best you can?
Three gyros. Three axes in space are run by gyros. So these gyros spin at a high rate. So you know the principle of the kids' gyro on Blackpool Tower. It never moved from where you set it to go. Where you set it going, you ran it hard enough. It just stayed on that principle. So that as the missile moved over, the gyroscope stayed in the same place in space and turned, and in turning it told the guidance systems, the electronics, as to what was where it was turning and how much it had to turn. And these all had to be set up before the missile was launched by using theodolites.
So how would you actually set them up?
Well, there's a mirror on the guidance system. There was a mirror on the guidance system that peeped out of a hole in the side of the missile. And this drove a gimbal around to a certain angle, and you set the theodolites up so that theodolites, which are when you're doing milestones or just an ordinary theodolite, so this was programmed to the exact angle that this guidance ball must stay at, and that was all was telling it. The gyros then held the missile, held the guidance system at the point that it was set to.
Now, anything else you were learning? So that's the fuel system, the rocket guidance system.
Yeah.
That was the gyroscopes. What else?
The hydraulic systems.
Now, what were the hydraulic systems in there?
Well, most of the hydraulic systems, there were a couple of hydraulic systems on the aircraft, on the missile itself, to guide the. You see, unlike an ordinary aircraft, where you have elevators and rudders and these things, the guidance of a rocket is done by swiveling the engine. The way if you turn the engine, then the missile goes. When I say swiveling, it's minute. You don't bunk it right over. And this type of thing. Now the other thing that was on it was the warhead. And we didn't have anything to do with the warhead. That was totally under the control of the Americans.
And what did you learn about the hydraulic system? I mean, was it a simple system?
This is the point. We were all aircraft fitters. It was just doing basic hydraulics. Just a highly accurate one, though.
Now, you were at the Douglas Aircraft Company. You say it was a rubbish course, but you seem to have learned. So when?
Oh, that was afterwards.
What happened next then? This course lasted for how long?
Again, I can't remember without it. It must have been a couple of months, but I can't really remember the exact time.
And throughout this, you were at the Davis Monthan Air Force Base.
Yeah.
And so how were you getting on with the Americans and their methods?
We weren't very happy with it. Unlike what I was saying about the Germans, how highly trained they were, the Americans had to work on the fact that a lot of their lads were National Service and they didn't stay for long. So there's a lot of the servicing procedures and things of this nature were built on, they've got lots of people, but they only talk little bits, you know, for instance, on an aircraft. And again, they got so many that it didn't matter. On an aircraft, one man would just do propellers and nothing else, and this sort of thing. So that their knowledge of technically was much less than ours, except for certain people that were usually master sergeants who were real
And how did you get on with them?
Oh, basically, we got not too bad with the Americans. They used to irritate us at times, but nothing any more than... It's probably us that irritated them, for all I know. Brits can be awkward buggers.
No fights with them, though?
Oh, no. Never, no. Nothing like that at all.
So you were doing this course, unhappy with it. Now, on your notes, you've got reference to Tucson and Vandenberg.
Yeah, well, we went at the end of the course, we went for a very short time over to Vandenberg to see the missiles on the pad.
Now, what's the Tucson bit then?
Well, Tucson is the Davis-Monson Air Force Base.
That's at Tucson?
Yeah, that's at Tucson. Sorry, I got too technical there. Davis-Monson, that was... Yes, we went then with the American Air Force to Vandenberg just to more or less go round and get a little bit of information off of the pad and that as they were there.
What did they look like? I mean...
What, Thor?
The Thor, yeah. I mean, just to give us a description. I mean, what...
Like an erectile penis. You can't get any better than that.
And, I mean, what did you think of them when you saw them? I mean, were they what you were expecting? Were they as big and powerful looking as...
Yes. Yes, there's no doubt about it. They were marvellous. We were all quite happy to go on it. It's far in advance. We had bloodhounds and things like that in this country, but they were nothing. They were...
And did you know much about the bloodhound and things
like that? I didn't know anything about a bloodhound, no. And not to do with it.
So anything else about this course in America?
No. So we did a lot of waiting around and doing not much and extremely good grub and low pay.
But at this stage, you hadn't learned much about it.
You didn't learn much at all.
Scratched the surface.
Yeah, exactly. Just scratched the surface completely.
How many went?
Again, I can't really be sure. See, the whole of the British Thor Force, there were five stations, each with 315. There was about 60 missiles in the country. I had to train all the people for that, including crews, technicians, the lot, so that were a lot of people went. So, but in different courses at different times.
Now, you came back, what, in December?
Yes, I was like it. That, yes.
And back to Tuddenham?
Yeah. No? Did it go? Oh, yes. Well, I actually came back to Port with my wife. No, that of course is a little bit I should stick in there. Is when I was out there at the end of the course, it was coming up, I was posted to somewhere in Yorkshire. Brampton. No, I can't remember the exact. Posted somewhere in Yorkshire. And of course, I did my nut about this because I thought I was going to Feltwood because my family were in mail quarters at Feltwood. And as where the power. Do you know what the buffs are?
If you just explain to me.
Well, the buffs are a secret society type of thing, but it's a service one. You know, you're in the buffs and they do all sorts of daft things. In actual fact, they're making money for a charity. It's something like the Freemasons, but a poor man's Freemasons. And I was
tell us about them. We don't know anything about them at all. A bit about the organisation.
Well, again, I'm almost certain it's disappeared now. There are certain buff lodges about, but
they call lodges, are they?
They call buff lodges.
And it's BUFF.
BUFF, yeah. And they run these little. It's a totally secret society. You're sworn to secrecy. You don't tell anybody what goes on there. Not as that much goes on. They can't tell you. You used to have a little meeting devoted mainly to drinking, and you had these set procedures, and you got fined if you didn't do it right. And all
what
this
type
sort
of procedures?
Thing. Oh, just daft. You had to call the chief. I've forgotten his name now. The primo, he was called, the primo. You had to call him by the correct title, and we had a policeman that went round, who was the policeman, and he used to get fined a penny and things like this if you didn't do things right. You deliberately didn't do things right, because at the end of the day, what you got went to charities, and that sort of thing. It was really a
crazy
drinking club.
You've been posted to Yorkshire when you got back.
Tuddenham.
To Tuddenham?
Yeah, that's in Norfolk.
I thought you said you went to Yorkshire.
Where did it say that?
No, you said it.
If I said it, then that's wrong.
Okay, because I said you went to Tuddenham and you said you went to Yorkshire, but you couldn't remember where the place was.
Well, I don't know.
You don't know where that came from. So you went to Tuddenham when you came back from Tucson. Tuddenham's in Yorkshire.
In Norfolk.
In Norfolk, right.
Yeah.
Now, what was happening at Tuddenham?
Tuddenham was the first Thor base I went on. It was actually being equipped while we went there, and they put the three missiles on Houston while I was there.
Now, what's the Buff Lodges got to do with this then?
The Buff Lodges came in at the fact that... I'd missed that bit out, didn't I? I can see what you mean now. I was posted to the Yorkshire, but I didn't go. What happened is that I did my nut about it, so I wanted to go. And back in UK, there's a warrant officer there who was one of the Buff people at Feltwell, one of our Buff people. So I got hold of him and rang him up. And don't ask me how I did that. I don't know how I did it from the States, but I definitely got hold of him. And he organised it that I was no longer posted to Yorkshire. I was posted back to Feltwell. This is through.
But you didn't go to Feltwell, you went to Tuddenham.
Well, okay, I was posted back to Feltwell, but Feltwell was the base and Tuddenham was the satellite. So I was stationed at Feltwell, but I actually worked at Tuddenham all the time. So I still stayed in May quarters at Feltwell. We never moved out of the May quarters, we stayed in the same place. And I used to come back every night to get there, but the actual base I was working on was Tuddenham. And this is where I met the mighty Thor.
So what was the unit called? Was it just called a Thor base, or did it have a number and all sorts of...
I think it was 77 Squadron. I've got it in the papers somewhere. 77 Squadron, I'm pretty sure it was. I should know, because I've been doing all that in the flipping ton down here. I've written hundreds of pages about it. That was 70. So all of the squadrons, you see, that were Thor squadrons, or Thor units... were given squadron numbers, just most of them were from wartime squadrons that had gone defunct.
Now, what was the organisation of the base at Tuddenham then? I mean, what happened? Were there just three missiles?
Missiles, 24 hours, 365 strokes, 66 days a year, operational.
Now, how were they stored? I mean, so you've got three missiles. Right. What happens? What is the crew of a missile? What's happening? I mean,
the crew of a missile is a launch control crew, which is the officer... the launch control operator, which operates the consoles for it, a missile maintenance technician for each missile, addition to which you have cooks and policemen and a generator operator to operate the generating systems.
And that's a launch control crew?
That's a launch control crew. And that's all there is on the station.
Now, were they in silos, or what were they in?
No, they were on... they're on sliding hangars. They called them shelters, actually. We would call them hangars. The Americans called them shelters. And we stuck with all the terminology of the Americans, otherwise it would have been confusing. These shelters ran on rails, which actually covered the missile, which laid flat, right? Shelters slid over the top simply for weatherproofing. The missile was mounted on what is called a launch mount.
Now, what's a launch mount?
Well, this is what it was mounted on. The base that it was mounted on, which was hinged through 90 degrees, so that when the shelter slid back as part of the countdown, the missile was raised to a vertical position ready for firing.
And so what exactly was your role in all this?
Well, at that particular time, I was MMT. I had one of these missiles to look after.
MMT meaning?
Missile Maintenance Technician.
Now, what exactly did you have to do then?
On the site, every hour you went round your missile, you checked all the gauges, all the pressures, checked there was absolutely nothing wrong. What you remember, this thing had a nuclear warhead. So you were totally looking at it all the time. That was it. There's lots of day-to-day maintenance done on it as well. You did exactly the same sort of thing. You had to you checked that all the pressures in all the trailers and everything like that were up to date. If you happened to be on when they came in, you had to call for refueling. And they came, British Oxygen used to bring most of it, actually. They were the only people in the country that had sufficient oxygen to do it. I mean, up to that time, the Air Force had used oxygen, but they're only in little bottles for aircrew. This was using it in thousands of gallons, so British Oxygen had to go mad on it, and they used to bring it in. But this, you know, you used to keep check of everything that was happening, watch, see any leaks, anything of this nature.
Now,